ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So it's a little green rucksack without which I cannot see the truth. Sorry about that. Shakespeare said that old age is characterized by sans nose, sans teeth, sans eyes, sans everything. It means that as you get older, you lose your teeth, you lose your nose, you lose your eyes, and you lose everything else. One time Prabhupada said, some people used to ask Prabhupada, what is a guru? And Prabhupada used to give many different replies. And he said, this is a guru. And he went like this. He said, now I can see you. Now I can see you better. This is guru. Guru helps you see better. So where are we? Text what?
No, I can't see.
Text 12, okay. There's no perceivable meter for this one. And there's a very small purport. Atha kada chit kashchit vrishala patir bhadra kalyai purusha pashum alabhata patya kamaha. Atha. Thereafter. Kada chit. Anybody knows? Yeah, any? Kadachit? Any? At any time? At some time? Kashchit? Some. Vrishalapati? The leader of sudras engaged in plundering the property of others. Bhadrakalyai. Unto the goddess known as Bhadrakali. Purusha Pashum. An animal in the shape of a man. Alabhata. Started to sacrifice. Apatyakama. Desiring a son. Translation. At this time, being desirous of obtaining a son, a leader of dacoits who came from a Shudra family wanted to worship the goddess Bhadrakali by offering her in sacrifice a dull man who is considered no better than an animal. Please repeat. At this time, being desirous of obtaining a son, a leader of dacoits who came from a Shudra family wanted to worship the goddess Bhadrakali by offering her in sacrifice a dull man who is considered no better than an animal. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. Low-class men, such as sudras, worship demigods like Goddess Kali, or Bhadrakali, for the fulfillment of material desires. To this end, they sometimes kill a human being before the deity. They generally choose a person who is not very intelligent. In other words, an animal in the shape of a man. Oma jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurum militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Where do we go with a verse like that in the European Union in 2012? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, circuitous route, I think. In South India, there's a place called Ahobilam. And in Ahobilam is a place, reputedly, although there are many other such places, where Lord Narasimhadev appeared. And there's 9 different forms of Lord Narasimha. And one of the forms is worshipped by the Chanchu tribe. Now, India is a very interesting place to be. Because whereas the European project has basically been to homogenize the population, to make everything flat, to make everything horizontal, to make everybody equal. This has been the European project since the end of the Second World War, for obvious reasons. We will go into that a little bit later. But here we have a country where there's a great difference between different types of people. Now, Prabhupada would always talk in terms of first class, second class, third class, fourth class, low class, or tenth class sometimes. He would talk in terms of classes. Please put your hand up the last time you ever used the word class referring to something other than going to class and being given a class or taking a class. You use the term class? You're British. Irmela? Stratification of classes. Very good. You are aware, of course, that you might be arrested teaching that in modern Europe. Yes. So when we go to India, we find people who, if you go to the Amazon jungle, you would find what the Victorians would call primitive people, savage people, and what these days we would call people in touch with nature, people to whom we look for guidance, because they haven't been industrialized. Therefore, they must be pure. They must be pure as people were in the Garden of Eden, you see. So we look towards tribal people to see how we can better ourselves. That is the tendency, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately because it's not actually true. Simply because you live in a jungle and wear no clothes does not mean that you are a great philosopher. There are people who live in jungles and wear next to no clothes, and they are great philosophers. So what to do? You have to discriminate between them. So this, sometimes we find in Orissa, there's a lot of what the Indian government calls now scheduled castes. Scheduled castes. People who are listed in the schedule of tribes, meant to be either protected or, unfortunately, as is often the case, corrupted by the Indian government. Or evangelized by American Christians who go there and give them Jesus, which was probably the last thing they were looking for, actually. So in Ahobilam, which is in Andhra Pradesh, in southern, or middle Andhra Pradesh, there's a Chenchu, the Chenchu tribe. And as part of their deliverance, the acharyas coming from Arivan Shatakopan, who, it is said, was visited by Lord Nrsingha, who gave him a beautiful deity of Lord Nrsingadev like this, and this deity of Nrsingadev constantly travels all around India because he was given the instruction that most deities of Nrsingadev are installed in one place and they stay in one place. This deity will travel in order to give benediction because it's the Kali Yuga. So they constantly travel. The sannyasis were the deity of the Lord. However, there are 9 forms of Lord Nrsingadev in Ahobilam and many other forms dotted around the place. And at one particular form of Lord Nrsingadev, the local tribespeople come and they offer goats. They slaughter a goat in front of Lord Nrsingadev. This is their religion. Now, it's not that Lord Nrsingadev likes to eat goats, because nowhere in the scriptures do we find this description. But these tribal people are not interested really in scriptures because they have their own customs. They just know here is God, here is a form of God, and this form of God is in our jungle, and he's come to visit us in our jungle. So we must offer to him what we would offer to anyone else. So these particular things are there. There is another tribe who the Victorians tried to stamp out, but apparently, Prabhupada says, it is still going on. And they are known as the thuggies, from which we derive the English word thugs. A thug is a mindless criminal who mugs someone. Maybe the mug is related to the word thug. But the thuggies, they would ambush pilgrims particularly, Because pilgrims tend to be in a very joyful, religious mood, not thinking too much about their protection. Although it is said that if you go on pilgrimage, travel in as great a number as possible. If you eat, eat alone. If you study, study with someone else. And if you travel, travel with as many as possible. Good advice. So they would ambush pilgrims or rich people coming through the jungle, and sometimes they would offer them to Bhadrakali, particularly, I suppose, you know, well-proportioned businessmen. I can think of a few people in the Occupy Wall Street protests who would also have liked to have offered a certain human sacrifice of well-proportioned businessmen. But we don't do that. We don't do that. We, unfortunately, sacrifice our young men in wars. Hundreds of them, thousands of them, go off to war, offered to the goddess of wealth and the goddess of territorial ambition, or the goddess of oil. This is a great shame. So when we read of these so-called primitive people, we should think, are we any better? That tendency for one human to sacrifice another human is always there. But particularly Prabhupada here is talking about low-class people. And when I first came into the company of devotees, I wondered why they were also class-conscious. Because I thought, these are spiritual people. And on the one hand, they were telling me, Pandita Samadarshana, that we should see everybody as equal, because everybody is not the body, everybody is the soul within, therefore everybody is equal. But on the other hand, they were repeating Prabhupada's words, and Prabhupada used the word class a lot. I don't know how many times Prabhupada used the word class, but if you want to know, I guess you can go to just over the road here, and you can find out exactly how Prabhupada expressed the word class. But Prabhupada was often using the word class. This cooking is first class. This worship is 10th class. This man is offering his understanding of God is low class. He's a very high class Brahmin. You see, we talk about class a lot. Whereas we are, to a certain extent, I want to completely generalize, but we are creatures of modern Europe. And the exercise of class and tribal and racial and ethnic discrimination was so pronounced during the period of 1933 to 1945 that, practically speaking, the future of Europe was based on the elimination of discrimination. Now, this is, on the one hand, you could say, well, what a spiritual ambition. What a spiritual ambition that anyone, regardless of race or tribe or creed, could have freedom. They could do anything. Of course, this is a utopian dream. Because we come in this world with what is known as prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma means a certain amount of your choices will be governed by... let's not even get into astrology or Eastern philosophy. Let's just say that the genetics by which you engage in decision-making in interaction with your environment governs a lot of your destiny. But the modern European project is to eliminate as much as possible any distinctions, certainly any distinctions of class. We aim for a classless society. And the more socialist state you have, the more classless you aim to be. So Denmark is a utopia. Right? Anybody from Denmark? No. You're from Denmark. Okay. You have been, yes. Yeah, as they say, people in Denmark are very happy. They're very happy. The idea is that by eliminating the external differences, we can somehow arrive at a point of actually spiritual understanding. But Prabhupada calls that anukarana. There's anusharana, which means following of a great mahatma, who is Pandita Samadarshana, who sees everyone equal. And there's anukarana, imitation of someone who can see all as equal. And I read a purport just recently where Prabhupada is condemning that. He's saying if you cannot see everyone as equal, then your business is not to pretend that you can. We're not engaged in pretense. So it seems that to a certain extent, sometimes to a ridiculous extent, we are trying to remove stereotypes that we have of race and to a certain extent gender. Someone sent me an article the other day about a child who had been raised gender neutral. This little boy, for the first 5 years of his life, was not told, you're a little boy. He wasn't told that you're a little girl. He wasn't told anything at all. And so on his first day at school, it was a bit shocking. I think he came to school wearing a ballerina dress or something like that. This idea that if you remove all physical designations, that if you remove all references to ethnicity, that if you remove all class, that somehow you will get a society that is kinder and more compassionate, is a false idea. It's a false idea because inherently society is structured. It is structured. And it seems like Prabhupada was very keen on reminding us of this. Because on the one hand, you see, this is the difficulty. This is the difficulty. Because on the one hand, Vaishnavism, certainly our entire history of the bhakti movements from medieval times up until today, has all been about seeing the Vaishnav in the person. Whatever particular level of society they come from. So therefore we find wonderful stories and songs from the Madhva Sampradaya and what was his name? Kanaka Das, who was a Sudra, who at one point could not enter the temple. And he came and he used to sing in a beautiful voice. And if you go to Udupi today, there's a monument to Kanaka, a little shrine to him in the place where he stood singing to his Lord Krishna. And as the story goes, Lord Krishna turned 180 degrees on the altar to face his devotee, and a hole appeared in the wall from which Kanaka could view his Lord. So at that point, everybody realized that Vaishnavism, or the feelings for the Supreme Personality of Lord, the love of the Lord, is more important than which social designation you belong to. However, even knowing that, Madhvacharya insisted that the best possible progress in spiritual life could be made from one's own varna and ashram designation, even to the point of describing different types of souls. Ramanujacharya took initiation from a guru who was a member of the Shudra class, and he lost his wife over the argument because the wives couldn't get on. He was a Brahmin class, and his wife was Brahmin, and she went to the well, and the wife of his guru was at Goshtipurna. She was there, and some water splashed from her bucket into Ramanujacharya's wife's bucket. And this was completely unheard of. How can you possibly do this? How can you share this well with me at the same time? I made the mistake once in Vrindavan of doing that. There was a tap on the outside of a building, and someone had filled their bucket. You know, I stood at a distance because I thought, oh, okay, these are Brahmins, I better be respectful. You know how to keep a healthy distance. And so they went into the building, and I thought, okay, that's that. So then I came and I filled my, you know, whatever it was, a drink bottle or something. And they came out, and there was hell to pay. You're using the same stream of water that Brahmins are trying to. You've got to understand that a stream of water is a solid thing, ritualistically. The stream, and if you use the same stream of water, you've now contaminated that same stream of water, and we'll have to. So they became very angry. So I didn't realize, of course. I just thought, well, you know, you got your bucket of water and the water's still flowing and here's the time for me to put my bucket there. So the two wives, there was a difficulty, and Ramanuja saw that it is now time for me to depart from this situation. So we see in that situation his preference of the position of the soul, the free soul, the Mahatma soul, the Pandita Samadarshana soul, over the social positioning. But it's not that, you know, Ramanujacharya then went on a campaign to destroy all distinctions in medieval society in India. He didn't do that. Because, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur would later say, if one is not free from the modes of passion and ignorance, one must execute his duties according to Varna and ashram. But that's not a... We don't hear a lot about that in our Krishna consciousness movement. We come from all different backgrounds. And as long as we are able to basically follow the principles and the programs and the rituals and study the Shastra, then we find ourselves in a sort of a classless position. Everybody bows down to everyone else, and that's good. But the difficulty is in organizing society, acting as a Brahmin. As a Vaishnava, you behave in one way. As a Brahmin, you're called upon to uphold the natural divisions of society. And this is sometimes where we get a little confused. And sometimes Vaishnavas try to see everyone equal. And of course, everyone's not equal for practical purposes. This is the modern political project. It's a type of manifestation of Kali Yuga, actually, to have a homogenized society. And sometimes society is actually brutally homogenized. And people who seek distinction are repressed. People even seek to describe reality are victimized. It's quite interesting. There's punitive measures in society if you are held to be discriminating. Whereas Srila Prabhupada would talk about discrimination, meaning the ability to choose between one thing and another and be able to categorize it and see whether it's good for you or unhelpful for you in your spiritual life. Healthy discrimination is very important. Therefore, if someone comes to you with a plate of stones and someone comes to you with a plate of pizza, you should not look and just say, stones or pizza, it's all the same to me. No. Firstly, the restaurant would close if he served stones. Secondly, your teeth would break. So you have to have discrimination in what you put inside your body. Very healthy. Then we're told to have discrimination over which conversations we listen to. You know, what did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? It was a symptom of Vaishnav, asat sanga tyaga. So you have to, a Vaishnav achara. So you have to know who's satsanga and who's asatsanga. So very healthy discrimination. Razor sharp discrimination. A Brahmin, or those who are cultivating Brahminical potency, is meant to have razor sharp discrimination. So how foolish it is to try to remove that discrimination in the name of seeing everything and all as equal. And although that's a utopian idea in modern Europe, we don't actually do it. There is a sliding scale of reality. Because if a person commits a crime, what does the judge say? The judge is the person who has to judge. That's his job. No one should point a finger at a judge and say, "You're being judgmental." That's his job. And excuse me, but where did judging someone or something become wrong? There are some words that have been invented as part of the modern European project, which we really cannot embrace. And I feel that judgmental is one of them. Because what people say is prejudiced. That's what they mean when they say judgmental. But you have to judge. You have to judge whether you're doing the right thing, saying the right thing, in the right place at the right time. Otherwise you'll find yourself at midnight down a back alley and you'll find yourself being robbed. You have to be very conscious of the world around you. Chanakya Pandit was very conscious. That's why he was employed by the Kshatriya king. He was very conscious. And how they selected Chanakya Pandit was they saw that Chanakya Pandit could not get a wife. He was having a, so the story goes. He could not get a wife, so he was seeking employment somewhere. Anyway, so that he was seeking employment so he could. He wasn't doing very well. And there was a spy of the king looking to see how Chanakya, which could be a good Brahmin advisor for the king. So he said that he came across some kusha grass. Now, kusha grass is a pure substance. We use it in deity worship, said to be coming from the hairs of Lord Varaha. But when it's cut, the stubble is very sharp, and you can cut your feet if you're not careful. So Chanakya, he walked on this, and he cut his foot. And he became so angry. Life wasn't treating him very well. So he went and he got some milk. And there's only one thing that dissolves kusha is milk. So he poured milk on the kusha grass in order to have his revenge. So then, interesting. So then someone was spying from the bushes and he looked at him and he said, this would be a very good Brahmin for the king. Because this Brahmin is very, he's got a sharp edge to him. So he was employed. Anyway, how did we get there? So later on, of course, Chanakya Pandit proved how sharp he was at discriminating between this and that, between ants on the floor that had sugar in their mouths and other ants that were in other places. And he saved the king, many soldiers. So Brahmin means that you're able to weigh up a situation and able to make judgment. In fact, you're using your powers of discrimination at every moment. So what an injustice to tell Brahmins that they cannot discriminate. You see? What an injustice to try to do that. And therefore, the Brahmins of today have to be quite outspoken. And what it means in our preaching is that we have to be quite courageous. And sometimes we cannot go with the flow. We cannot adhere to the status quo and actually get our message over. Our message may be popular, it may be unpopular, but it must be spoken. So, this idea that you should not recognize a person's behavior or their voice or their exterior, this runs counter to what we read in the Bhagavatam. Early on in the Bhagavatam, we find that the sages, when they were gathered by the river, they saw Sukadeva Goswami. He was coming. He was naked. But they actually saw past the nakedness and they saw his physiognomy. And they saw by the symptoms, by the 32 symptoms displayed on his body and in his face and his limbs, he has all the characteristics of a Mahatma, someone who has Brahmagyan. Someone who is born into Brahmagyan. Some people are born into it. Some people rise to it, and some people are born into it. He was born into it. So then he was given the highest position. He was given a position of respect because he had the symptoms. And they knew what the symptoms were. Similarly, this is the difficult thing, that Shastra says two things. And that if you don't understand how they fit together, they would seem to be mutually exclusive, mutually in opposition. One is Pandita Samadarshana, and one is that human society should be organized according to Varna and Ashram, and it should be stratified. Okay? So, one is given to organize human society, so that collectively human society can prosper. And one instruction is given to a person who, from his or her position in Varna and Ashram, is seeking to become transcendental. Transcendental means in the consciousness, not necessarily that person immediately occupies the brahminical position. Brahmin means to teach. This is Brahmin. Really, the classes in society are equal in the sense that it is just people are designated, and they have to be designated. Because when you have a well-structured society, people have labels, people have designations, people have classes, people have names. You know, it's very important. As you know, when I went recently, not recently, but a few years ago into hospital, I wanted to know who was going to operate on me. And my doctor said, well, look, this is, his name's David, you know, and he's an expert in this, and he's done this, and he's performed this operation, and he told me exactly how many times he'd done this specific operation. He had qualifications. So I had to see the qualifications before I was happy letting this person cut me open. Similarly, if you go to a bank these days, you know, we're far less trusting. We want the bank, we want to see what the bank's credentials are, what the bank's qualifications are, you see, before we just trust someone indiscriminately with our money. Because we have trusted the wrong people with huge sums of money, we're all in a mess. We've all had to pay the price. So trust must be there, but trust has to be based on careful discrimination of the person who is going to do the trusting. So for organizing society, we must have external labels. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is doing both things. He's saying to Arjuna, you're a kshatriya, you have to work as a kshatriya. Then a few pages later, he's saying, you know, you're not that body. You're a particle of the supreme person, which is me. You know, you're in free flow, free flight. Okay. So both things are there, and both things have to. The vehicle, which carries the soul, has prarabdha karma. It has a social designation, and it must. And people have to interact on the basis of their social designation. Otherwise, we have nothing. A story is told of the early days of the Quaker religion. The Quaker religion is a very funny story for us, you know, because James Fox is an actor. George Fox, he'd been preaching. He went up Pendlebury Hill in Lancashire and he'd had his realizations, okay? And then the first thing that you do when you have a little bit of Brahma Gyan is that you want to tell everybody. This Brahma Gyan, Brahma Vidya, is not so unusual. Prabhupada even said at one time that Diogenes, the Greek philosopher, was Atmarama. He was Brahma Gyana. He used to live in a barrel outside Athens, and Alexander the Great came and said, you're my guru, or words to that effect in ancient Greek. He said, what can I do for you? And he said, you can stand out of the sunshine. He said, I can give you anything. I can give you kingdoms. Just stand outside. You're casting a shadow on me. And Prabhupada said, Gurudas told me that. Prabhupada said he was completely self-satisfied living in his barrel outside the city. You see, for a person who values two things, austerity and knowledge, and the relish of teaching these things to others, he's a Brahmin. He's very easily satisfied. What was my point before that point? George Fox, yeah, the Quaker, yeah, excuse me. So he said, this body is simply a shell. He said, this body is simply a shell. We are not this body. We are the soul within. And the following Sunday, an elderly woman came to the church where George Fox was preaching wearing no clothes at all. And she'd smeared her body in her own urine. And she walked up to him and she said, thank you for the realization you gave me last week, vicar. She said, I have fully understood this body is just stool and urine. It is just a temporary vehicle for the soul. Thank you. And of course, she scandalized the entire congregation. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Dangerous for her and dangerous for society. Therefore, those who have this realization, they live on the outside of society. You see, avadutas don't mix very thickly. You can't put an avaduta as the head of a spiritual organization. It doesn't work. You see, the heads of a spiritual organization have to be discriminating as to which is proper behavior and which is not proper behavior. You see, too much avaduta, and they try to homogenize, brahmacharis and sannyasis, and it's all one. We're all devotees. You know, like I was saying last night, Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse 24, he said, even when I come to this world, I act as a karmi, Krishna says. I perform prescribed duties. And by karmi, Prabhupada explains, one who follows the Vedic injunctions. Even when I come to this world, because if I didn't, everybody else would not. So we have to be very careful and use our powers of discrimination to see which, what we're trying to do. Either we're trying to become liberated or we're trying to organize a society. Now, there's two things. We're trying to organize the society of ISKCON, for which very careful discrimination is required. Because we do have an ashram system, and there are very clear distinctions between the ashrams. We don't have a varna system as yet. Perhaps that will come in the future. The other thing is that perhaps we will be asked to help to organize other branches of society outside. And for that, we'll have to manifest a different type of wisdom, different type of knowledge. It's like that one devotee is our Nitesh Gore, Naveen Krishna, whose project is the schools project in England. Now he's looking forward to doing the fourth school. I was talking to him the other day, and he's saying that the government has now asked him to be a consultant for Hinduism in education for the whole country. Previously it was someone else who didn't really have as great affection for, shall we say, the certain dharmic principles. So that gives him a position where he interacts with politicians, and he has to come up with wisdom, which as close as you can get in the modern day Kshatriya can say, yes, this is wise, these are wise people, we can use this, because they are actually looking for wisdom. Because politicians, I talk to politicians quite a bit, and they say, look, you're the people who really, you know morality, and we're just politicians, we just try to get policies through. But policies are based on philosophy, and philosophy is based on morality. So we need you to do your, you know, we need, it's sometimes confidentially they say, we need people like you to do what you do best, you know, in order to help us do what we've been charged to do. So that's a future consideration for the ISKCON movement, to be able to provide missing European Brahmins, missing European Brahminical class. And it's very interesting that in England we have a person known as the Archbishop of Canterbury, and twice in the past 6 weeks he has met with devotees. He's visited the heads of Vaishnava institutions in India, and just a couple of weeks ago they launched the Hindu Christian Forum, and of course the leading Hindu of Great Britain was our temple president, Shruti Dharma. And so the idea is that by pooling talents of Brahmins, we can have some effect on modern day society. Prabhupada said at one point that the missing link in human society is this Shastric wisdom. There's a great deal of wisdom there, you see, but we have to be talking to the right people. We have to meet the right people. And this is, everyone is charged with that responsibility. There's a great need in modern human society to cut through the utopian and hopeless ideals which were based on the wrong thing. Sometimes when you try to construct a philosophy out of having done the wrong thing, you don't come up with the right thing, you come up with something else completely. And the whole, you know, Western culture is suffering because of that. So we have an important role to play, and not just to read the books of His Divine Grace, but to be able to speak on them at any given point to any given audience, in order to share the great wisdom that's contained within them. So. And this point, we're hearing about Judd Bharat, who was himself He was. I'm not going to speak about it, but tomorrow the speaker will talk about how he was arrested, and whether he was arrested or whether he was sitting quietly looking after the cows, it was no different to him. Being in a position of physical freedom or in a position of physical bondage was no different to him. He was taken. This was his trajectory in life. You see. And we're also going to hear about how Krishna protects his devotees, sometimes directly, as he did with Prahlad Maharaj, and sometimes indirectly, as he does with Jad Bharat, and the goddess empowered, the agent of Krishna came to protect Jad Bharat. But I won't get on to the exciting part, because that comes very soon. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna. Now, I've been told that I must ask for questions, but I think we've gone way over time, have we not? And everyone is hungry, are they not? And discrimination is between, you know, there's a big difference between 8:30 and 8:45. You normally finish at 8:45. I defer to my learned colleague, a man of wisdom. You will notice that I didn't get too much into a discussion of our branch of human society. There's much conversation to be had. Rasa. Oh, yes. It's a very popular question, isn't it? Who do you belong to? I was in Delhi once many years ago, and there was 14 brahmacharis in the brahmachari ashram, and I walked into the room, and it was late in the afternoon, and they were all sort of snoozing in different stages of, you know, relaxation, shall we say. And there's three questions you always get asked in India. What is your name? What is your country? And if you're in the ashram, Prabhuji, who's your guru? Okay? So just for fun, I mentioned the name of someone else who had, you know, fallen by the wayside in our ISKCON, and nobody moved. Nobody moved. And then someone came out of the shower and said, "Oh, no, Prabhupada Shisha, Prabhupada Shisha." Every single person got off their bunks and bowed down. So we have to look, I think, beyond that label. But the word is prejudice. Prejudice. Pre means before. And it means that you assimilate by the external characteristics of a person what you're now going to choose to think about them. And you try to do it in a quick way without actually finding out the real information. If you had tried to do that with Jad Bharat, you would have thought, well, this person is in the... he is mentally retarded. You would think that he had severe autism. You would think that because he's strong, maybe we could put him in the Paralympics coming up in London, which is another case of gender discrimination, actually, the Olympics. I mean, come on. Where do you get men's races and women's races. Men's javelin and women's javelin. Men's swimming and women's swimming. Why? Let's have it all together. If you don't want to stereotype people by gender, let's have it. But because there are physiological differences, you make the competition more interesting by having men's competitions and women's competitions. You see? So a society that does not discriminate between men and women, the biggest sporting competition is split completely along lines of gender for obvious reasons. So how do we do that in ISKCON? Well, we have to, you know, on the one hand, we have to take time. Prejudice means that I make my decision, my discrimination very quickly without assessing the actual qualities. So it's an assessment of qualities. How do you assess a person's qualities? Here at Radha Desh, everything is about assessment and accreditation, isn't it? But that it's a process that takes time. In the, you know, the learning environment, you assess and then you accredit. So not to assess properly is prejudice. So I would say that you take the time, but you also have the correct parameters for assessing a person. And the correct parameters for a person is not, we did it with various other organizations who were assessed not on the basis of, their bhakti, but on whether they had a sort of 2 or 3 week growth of beard, which the men were, sporting. Did we not? We said, oh, you're from that camp, or you're from another camp. So we make very quick assessments sometimes. But the parameter for assess, we have to change our language, and sometimes change the way we interact. That's also called for. Because the ISKCON language is something that has, it was given to us when the ISKCON movement was almost 100% communal, when we all lived together. And therefore the expression sort of 40 years later is still, oh, he or she lives outside the temple. Well, yeah, of course. But we still say, so language has a tendency to linger on for decades. Sometimes you have to be prepared to adjust even the terms that Prabhupada gave us because they don't make sense to others. Like the word take, take prasad, take rest, take bath, take sannyas. It's all taking. You see, sometimes people don't understand that turn of phrase. And sometimes people don't understand the word show bottle. I understand the word show bottle very well because when I was growing up, there was show bottles in the window of the chemist, and they were filled with colored water. It wasn't real medicine, but it was. So this is a show bottle. They were show bottles. But now, if you say, "Oh, he's a show bottle," but I've just got through giving the guru and disciple course in England to 50 people, and one of the first questions we ask them is, does the guru have to be a sannyasi? How many of you feel that the guru has to be a sannyasi? And we just ask people and see how many hands go up. You see, because these terms have become conflated. Guru and sannyasi is almost a sort of a integrated term. Or sometimes it's separated for the purpose of other things. We're having a kirtan festival and many gurus and sannyasis are coming. Spot the deliberate error in that expression. So we have to take our language sometimes, our ISKCON language, and say, is it fit for use? And there's a lot of ways that we speak that actually is based on things that are either no longer relevant, or reflect a state of affairs that should not exist or does not exist anymore. So use of language we can do. But it should reflect reality. My point is the modern European use of language is an attempt to get rid of reality and to substitute a reality that we would like to see, but which you have no hope of without spiritual culture, without genuine spiritual culture. Whereas here we have a spiritual culture, and sometimes we use discriminatory language, and we don't even reflect the reality that is. So language should always be used to reflect the real, not the hopeful or the idealistic. Let's describe things as they are. I personally feel that wherever we manifest a branch of ISKCON, we to a certain extent incorporate elements of the local culture. And for the purposes of preaching, that's not always a bad thing. Someone said to me, do I really have to wear a dhoti in Sweden when it's 20 below when I go on book distribution? I said, no. I think it's appropriate that you wear clothing that's just fit for purpose. Otherwise, you get a sort of strange situation there. So the local environment, local politics, local culture, we have to be able to represent ourselves in a way that local people will be interested in hearing from us. Local language, of course, is very important. But along with that, you have to be very careful that you don't imbibe the local culture and dilute our own Vaishnav culture. Therefore, you have to know what Vaishnav culture is, what local culture is, and you have to be able to discriminate. Otherwise, it does creep in. It does creep in. There's much that could be said. I'm sure that Irmila has discussed this over the last 2 weeks on her sociology course. I wished I could be there. Hopefully, she'll write a book. There's so many nice courses going on here. I'm just surprised that more people don't come here to study. It's such an interesting place to be. You know, interesting discussions to be had. And interesting breakfasts. Irmila. Yes. Yeah. Pretending. Oh, don't get me started, please. What sort of question is that?
Investigating one, and we found out that the crash is happening in the pilot was
And English pilots, because we don't mind being rude. Good pilots. Circumlocution. I'll come back to you when I've figured it out. Thank you very much indeed. Hare Krishna.